This is Jerry Bain podcasting from the CNI 2009 Fall Task Force meeting in Washington, D.C. I'm joined by Bernard Frischer, Director of the Virtual World Heritage Laboratory at the University of Virginia. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your history with the humanities?
I got into the humanities when I was a teenager. My profession is a classicist and classical archaeologist, and I remember when I was in sixth grade reading Bury's History of Ancient Rome, and I think that hooked me. I took 5 years of high school Latin, 4 years of German, 3 years of French, did the standard math and science courses as well. The one thing missing in my K-12 education was ancient Greek. And if you can believe this, I refused to go to my high school graduation unless my parents sent me to the University of Michigan in the summer of 1967 to do intensive introductory Greek.
Wow.
So I could hit college running and get into second year Greek. So I've been a humanist for a long time.
Can you give us a brief idea of the history of the humanities and the relationship it's had with 3D technologies?
3D technologies developed in the 1980s and especially in the early 90s. The technology at first was extremely expensive, and it was used mainly by the very companies that were producing the hardware and software needed to do anything in 3D. There was a show I remember very vividly in London in the summer of 1990 about Pompeii, and since I'm a Roman archaeologist, anything having to do with Pompeii, of course, interests me. I went to the show, and I was really surprised to see that IBM had used 3D modeling to make reconstruction models of some of the buildings in Pompeii. I had been thinking of doing that in the 1980s, but with a different technology, the video disc, which simply would have involved panoramic photos shot of a physical model of ancient Rome and making something on the model of the Aspen video disc, a famous early multimedia project. In fact, Nick Negroponte said in Being Digital it was the very first multimedia project. It dates back to the late 1970s. But when I saw that you could actually now create real-time 3D models, as tested by what IBM had done for Pompeii, I thought, wow, why don't we use this technology more broadly? And as that decade went on in the 90s, what became clear was that the companies were not really able to do the historical modeling correctly without the help of scholars. And so in the mid-90s, Diane Favreau, a colleague of mine in architectural history at UCLA, and I started the Cultural Virtual Reality Lab in order, as we said, to put the scholars into the driver's seat with this new technology. At that time, others were doing the same thing, and a book came out in 1996 that showed this, that other scholars were starting to get the same idea. And by 1998, our professional organization, Computer Applications to Archaeology, held a meeting dedicated exclusively to this new thing of 3D modeling of cultural heritage. So then we were off and running.
Well, your thesis for the presentation is that humanists have come to understand that their true power lies not so much in their ability to illustrate knowledge as to serve as discovery tools for generating new insights. How did you arrive at this conclusion, and how did it change either what humanists should be doing or how they should be viewed?
I think that right from the beginning, those of us who understood the potential of 3D modeling, so I'm talking about in the period 1990 to 95, understood that these things, since they were real-time and interactive, had the potential not simply to show us what we knew before we made the model, which is usually the case for any illustration. If you think of illustrating an archaeological report at the end of 10 years of work, you already know the answer, and you're just illustrating that for the benefit of someone coming into the problem for the first time. But we understood with a real-time interactive model that was very accurately made, a very accurate kind of digital surrogate for the original artifact, that you could suddenly experiment with it. And you could do things with it that you could also do with the original, except that if you're an archaeologist or an architectural historian, very often the original that you would like to put on the rack and torture out her secrets, as Francis Bacon said about nature. You could say the same thing about history. But the historical artifact is very often lost, has been destroyed, or at least damaged. And so you can't experiment with it in the same way. Well, we understood that you could do this with these 3D digital surrogates of human artifacts. Just took time, though, to build up the expertise and confidence in the simple act of representation of making the model. until we had the opportunity and the know-how and confidence to go on to the next step of using these models as places where experiments could be run.
Could you talk a little bit about any thoughts you might have on sustainability of digital objects?
I think there's an irony about this matter of sustainability of 3D and 4D objects, digital objects generally. We humanists have the task of documenting, analyzing, and transmitting the human record. In the last 20 or 30 or 40 years of the digital revolution, we ourselves have been contributing to the human record in a way I think that will be quite interesting to people hundreds of years from now, just as we look back at the era of Gutenberg and we see the spread of learning and the Renaissance in the late 15th and into the 16th centuries. And we study not only what those people were studying, which is, say, the ancients, but we study them as an object worthy of analysis and interpretation in itself. People will probably do that to us, but will they be able to? Or will this look like the Dark Ages? Because, you know, if you were living in the time of the so-called Dark Ages, it didn't seem dark. It was just normal life. It's dark to us because no documents survive, or very few, from the 6th, 7th, 8th centuries in Europe. So we call them the Dark Ages. Will people call our age the Dark Age? Well, it's always possible. I hope not, and I assume not. But there is that irony that we who are doing this have not paid much attention to preserving our own records. So our lab at the University of Virginia, with support from the National Science Foundation, has studied this problem over the last 4 or 5 years with 2 grants, and we've launched a project called SAVE that stands for Serving and Archiving Virtual Environments. And, of course, the name relates to this idea we ought to be saving this stuff. And what we hope to create is the world's first online peer-reviewed journal where scholars can publish their 3D and 4D models, along with related monographs, metadata, and the underlying documentation behind a reconstruction model. And we hope that through this publication outlet that, first of all, more people will be encouraged to do this kind of work, because there will be the normal academic rewards of promotion and tenure. But we also hope that we will have created this cyber infrastructure for sustainability. And if you then go on to ask me, well, how does that work exactly? All I can say is I don't really know, but I do think that the first task is to collect and organize the material, put it into a standardized format under somebody's curation. And then we have a hope for sustainability going forward. Whether it is sustained, I think, depends very much on the quality and value of the product. I think that humans tend not to throw away or let be destroyed or get lost things of value. And if we create SAVE as a collection of things of high value, then I'm confident that over the centuries, people to come will want to pick up where we left off and keep this thing alive and available.
Bernard Frischer, Director of the Virtual World Heritage Laboratory at the University of Virginia. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.